The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Now, listen, we're going to talk about burnout now, right? And in case you think this isn't relevant to you, bear in mind that the time to catch burnout, I think, is before you actually burn out, because I think once you tip over that that edge into burnout, it can be a very long and hard road back for some people. So let's get the general overview first, and then we'll talk to some people with experience of it. Dr. Deirdre O'Shea is a senior lecturer in work and organisational psychology in the University of Limerick. Deirdre, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
Deirdre, when we talk about burnout, what do we mean?
So burnout is a process, actually, as you said. It's characterised by three things. First is emotional exhaustion, which is feeling completely drained, exhausted by your work. The second thing is having negative feelings towards your job. And that's not sort of the normal, just feeling a little bit, tired or something like that. It's more feeling cynical about your job or about the people you have to interact with in your job. And the third aspect is a sense of not feeling like you're accomplishing what you should in your job. So, you know, you're trying to get through that to-do list and you can't get through it. And as I said, it's an end state of a process. So it's an end state of chronic stress that occurs as a result of work. And it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that happens over time, as you mentioned.
And I suppose, Deirdre, a lot of people would describe it as kind of losing the bounce back ability, isn't it? That like you don't come back easily from things when you get into this state.
Yeah, absolutely. And that ties in with the idea that we all need to recover from work. And there's about 20 years of research which has discussed this idea of how do we recover from work? You know, how do we get our energy back? Work is effortful, obviously. And normally we think, we'll take our 2 weeks of holidays in the summer or whatever the case may be. Actually, we now know that we need daily recovery from work. We need to have time at the end of the day or at the start of the day, depending on obviously our time schedules, to detach from work so that we're not thinking about work, to relax after a work day, and also to engage in things that we enjoy doing or that give us that sense of achievement or that sense of mastery. And we need to do that ideally daily, but at least to be doing it a few times every week.
Okay. And listen, I think a lot of people have lost that ability to rest from work because I think that always-on culture, which was developing anyway, the working from home didn't help it. And that was your situation, Kieran Walsh, wasn't it? And you're on the line from Dublin. So, Kieran, I suppose with you, I get the sense there was no big epic burnout, that it was a slow, gnawing kind of a process, as Deirdre was saying there. And it came from that always on, didn't it?
Good afternoon, Brendan. Yeah, so I think the last 12 months have been really interesting for me. You know, this time last year, I was living at home in Limerick with my mother, applying for new jobs and trying to deal with like the emerging pandemic. And now here I am working from a bedsit in Dublin city centre. And I definitely recognise some of the things that Deirdre was saying there around, you know, not feeling that you're getting things done in your job. And I think it's been difficult for me because I took up a role in the community sector in, was it July last year? And I was working from the office for a couple of weeks, but now it's all home base for the last 7 months. So it's that kind of lack of connectivity with co-workers that does leave that feeling of that gnawing feeling of not being able to get things done.
And Kieran, like, was it your employer putting pressure on you, or is it more that I think a lot of people are putting the pressure on themselves,
oh, no,
aren't they?
Brendan, absolutely not. Like my colleagues are fantastic, to be fair to them. It's this self-perception and the kind of self-awareness about where you are in your own situation. Like, so my job would involve like a lot of project management. So I could have anywhere between maybe 6 and 10 projects on the go at any one time. And when you're trying to complete a project, like you can see the start, you know, you kind of know where the finish point is. But and there's a load of these small steps along the way when you're trying to figure out like, where you're going, and there's nobody right next to you to kind of collaborate. So you have to, you know, you're flicking between Zoom meetings to try and make sure everything's okay. And then as soon as it's hard to kind of see what success is. But as soon as you see it at the end product, you're like, oh, I did that. That's me.
Yeah. And tell me, how did the sense of burning out start to manifest itself? How did you feel like?
I think just listening to what Deirdre was saying there, you know, it's that constant feeling like of having something left to do in a to-do list. You know, I think every single profession, it's very normal to have a long list of things to do. But when you're living by yourself in, I'm essentially living in maybe, what, a 6 metre by six, I'm reporting live from the bedsit in a 6 by 6 metre.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to kind of switch to the leisure time, and your phones are constantly connected. Now, I've turned my push notifications off in an effort to kind of stay away, and I have a very good friend of mine who says that, like, on the weekends I need to sign out of my emails, and that removes a habit of kind of always being connected. Now, I haven't reached that level of zen yet, but
yeah, to put some boundaries on yourself. Yeah, and listen, then the added complication of, I suppose, you'd moved to a new city and everything, and then, like, it wasn't an easy time to start building a social life. You're single as well, I presume dating and that has been very difficult.
This is it. Well, Brendan, I'll be taking applications for a boyfriend as soon as I'm vaccinated. But before I moved up, I had it all planned out. Myself and my friend had plotted this since 2019. And we'd planned tours of all the museums, the galleries, the parks. But sadly, like, it hasn't happened like that.
Yeah.
I'm stuck here and she's stuck, and she's in cohort 7 and still waiting for a vaccine. And she's been cocooning for the last 14 months, like the rest of cohort 4 and cohort 7, who hopefully will get their vaccine soon.
Yeah, so Kieran, really, like, there was that study during the week there saying 95% of people don't want to go back to the office, which I think it was a self-selected sample now, in fairness. I get the sense that the office would be very good for your sanity right now, would it?
Oh, absolutely. I've no doubt that, like, I'm looking forward to going back to the office. A lot of my job is in kind of a stakeholder engagement. But that said, you know, there's going to be a shift now in how we work, I think. And,
yeah,
and I think it's up to both employees and employers to kind of put in a structure and to make sure that it works for both. I'll be doing a hybrid model. There's no point in me commuting for a half an hour to send a couple of emails that I could do from my house. You know, I think that yeah, element of the pandemic or coronavirus will be kept, but there will be a hybrid model, I guess.
Yeah. Dr. Deirdre O'Shea, that sounds like that's Kieran's story could be replicated in certainly a lot of bedsits around Dublin and in a lot of bedrooms around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the challenges when people move to remote working so quickly was, of course, that this boundary between our home life and our work life suddenly disappeared. And, you know, there are benefits, as Kieran has been experiencing, to be able to separate home from work life. It helps us to psychologically detach. The other side of that, of course, is not being physically in the workplace if you're remote working, means that social support and the social connections and the ability to just, when you start a new job, you know, turn to a colleague and say, so how do I do this? Is, of course, much more challenging.
Absolutely.
You have to arrange a Zoom call or something to be able to do it.
Yeah, we all vibrate off other people, don't we, and pick up all kinds of stuff when you're in a room with somebody. Okay, Deirdre, stick with me, and I want to talk to Stephanie Costello next, who's on the line from Dublin. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Brendan.
So, Stephanie, you're 32 now, but you had suffered two burnouts by the age of 27. I think your first one was at 22. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I suppose my experience was quite interesting, Brendan, and I think indicative of these new trends that we're seeing in that younger people more and more are experiencing burnout. The first time, I suppose, I was 22. I was full-time in college, studying journalism, living out of home by choice. I was working as a waitress, and I was doing an unpaid internship. And, you know, because I didn't know anybody in the media, and I sort of came from this working class background, and I thought I had to work harder than everyone else to get my foot in the door and get this edge. So I was just burning the candle at both ends. I was ignoring all the warning signs. I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And I suppose the second time then, I was...
But tell me, what happened then when you hit the wall? Like, what were the signs or the symptoms?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first sign, I suppose, was just, like, chronic fatigue. I'd sleep for 8 hours, and then I'd just be absolutely exhausted when I'd wake up. I feel like my battery was just completely empty. I was totally out of breath. This was the scary part for me, was that I couldn't walk up a flight of stairs without taking a break. I couldn't walk more than 100 metres. I felt like I couldn't breathe. I couldn't
get enough air. Okay, so you were physically, like, shutting down, right?
Yeah, I was physically shutting down.
And tell me, how did you bounce back from that, the first one?
The first one I bounced back was I completely had to just break away from everything that I was doing. And look, I have to say as well and acknowledge my privilege in that, because I know that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who aren't able to just completely shut down and say, okay, I'm going to move back in with my parents. I'm going to stop working as a waitress. I'm going to stop interning, you know, working for free. I'm going to just, I have to just have a complete shift in everything that I did. Again, you know, that is privilege.
And it's quite dramatic life changes to have to make as well. So you obviously kind of managed yourself then for a while, but you succumbed again at the age of 27. And I think it was much worse the second time, was it?
This one was the big one, yeah. This one was a lot worse. This was 27. And again, I was, you know, final year, I was writing two dissertations. I was freelancing, which I'm sure you might know yourself, you know, freelancing in the media is pretty stressful, hard to shut off. And then there was actually compounded by a death in the family, and then just kind of had a relationship breakdown. And this was the one where I collapsed. This was a scary one because I had memory loss. I couldn't remember what I had for dinner or what I had for lunch that day. And I suffered from what's known as depersonalization, which is like you're just not the same person. You're like, you're looking outside at yourself. You're not laughing at the same jokes you would have anymore. Really scary, you know, when you're 27 and you're kind of experiencing these kind of symptoms. And sure, I went to the doctor, sure enough, and the doctor was just so shocked. I had low blood pressure. I was all over the place and prescribed me antibiotics because my immune system was just completely shot. So that was what I did. And I took, again, I had to just take a total break away. And again, you know, that's my experience, and I can't even imagine what it must be like, you know, for the likes of frontline healthcare workers and people like that who aren't allowed, you know.
I noticed here both times it happened, you kind of put your phone aside both times. Was that part of it, with social media and stuff, or just was being in contact with so many people just too much?
I think, you know, social media isn't inherently bad. It's just how we choose to use it. But when you're in this headspace and you're feeling overwhelmed, and you're going online and you're looking at everybody's mastered perfect lives on Instagram, or people are giving out on Twitter or boasting on LinkedIn, it can be really damaging because, you know, you're comparing yourself and you feel like a failure. But it's also very overwhelming when you can't kind of control almost the own voices in your own head.
Yeah, wow. Okay, Stephanie, thanks for that. Lots of people texting from all kinds of different backgrounds, right? And I think burnout was originally actually coined in terms of healthcare workers. And there's a nurse here in a HSE hospital. We struggled through COVID and we're getting back to our normal understaffed, overstretched health service. Now we're faced with a cyber attack. Could someone tell me how long is the stick we are continuously being beaten with? A very tired, burnt out nurse, right? There's a primary teacher here who's burnt out. I've been a primary teacher for over 20 years. I'm now in my late 50s. I've been burned out for about 10 years and just drag myself through each year and dream of retirement. Exhaustion has really limited me in and out of work. HGV driver, I'm doing 12 to 15 hours a day, sleeping in a cab a couple of nights a week. That would wear you down. So Deirdre, it sounds as if like these are people who, it's very difficult for them to have boundaries around what they're doing, isn't it? It is coming back to the fact that people are always on and grinding the gears all the time, is it?
Absolutely. I mean, in those types of examples, it's very difficult to be able to switch off. And you're right, burnout was originally coined from the lived experiences of people in healthcare or in caring professions, because, of course, of the emotional toll of caring for people and dealing with emotions all day long. And one of the things that is not often acknowledged around burnout and around psychological work-related well-being more generally is the sense of pressure that comes from it, or that contributes to burnout. And that form of pressure is actually a type of motivation that can, you know, it's any time we say I have to, or I can't, I have to keep going, I'm under pressure, you know, what happens if I don't do it? That is in and of itself quite stressful for us, which, you know, doesn't help matters either.
Yeah, and listen, there's one more I'm going to read now, because, and I know that people all over the country are going to say, and there go I as well. Burnout, I could write a book on it. As a parent carer for my adult child, I literally have nothing left in the tank at this stage. Whatever I'm talking about, getting back to normal, I think it's making me worse. I don't have a social life or a job. I haven't been on a proper holiday in 20 years. Listening to everyone complaining about not having a holiday for the last 14 months just makes me want to scream. And that's from Susie. And look, there's carers all over the country. And you know what? They're burnt out. But like Susie, they've no choice but to keep going, because that's it. Like, they have to keep going. And it's 24/7 for a lot of them, and it's really intense stuff. But, you know, we say, oh, like, isn't that great? And such love those people have and everything. But, you know, you can't just drive on love alone. I want to talk to one more person. Rory McKiernan is on the line from Lahinch. Rory, ironically, it was the Dalai Lama who tipped you over the edge, but we'll get to that. But I get the sense of you, you're a very dynamic, go-getter kind of young man. Like, you had founded spunout.ie, which people will have heard of, a youth NGO with a big emphasis on mental health. You'd founded that by the time you were 26. So what happened to you in terms of burnout?
Yeah, well, Brendan, I suppose the fire that I had inside me that led me to found the organisation, it was really a passion for change and a passion for probably addressing some of those issues that many of the texters referred to, the inadequacies, and particularly then for young people, and just really wanting to make a difference, to contribute something to change this country of ours. And I just had a big fire burning inside me, and that led me to, that was the spark that led to creating the organisation. And then over a number of years, myself and many others built up the organisation and eventually got funding. You know, it wasn't like any new enterprise, it takes a few years to get up and running. But it also takes blood, sweat and tears, and, you know, 24/7 and all of that. So ultimately it took its toll. Like, the organisation got established, and I guess the inherent irony is that, you know, the thing that I was creating almost in some ways spat me out. You know, it really crippled me in many ways. And by the end of a 7 or 8 year journey, we had a great organization and won awards, and it was very stable and secure and all that. But I was not. And my spirit, my spark, the very fire that I referred to, had started to go out. And I started to find myself in quite a dark place. And it was taking a toll mentally, psychologically, and you might say spiritually and physically. Even I started to have prostate trouble, and, you know, and this is really just then in my early 30s. So yeah, it really caused me to have a hard look in the mirror at myself.
And the moment was you were organizing the visit of the Dalai Lama, but that was that one extra thing, really, was it, that tipped you over the edge? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Dalai Lama is synonymous with tipping people over the edge, but yeah, it's certainly just the way things conspired. We'd set up a new office in Dublin, and we were involved as an organisation with others, Children in Crossfire and AFRI, in bringing the Dalai Lama to Dublin. And as part of that, I'd read a few of his books, autobiography and some of the teachings. And at that point, I'd started to question myself and to look in the mirror and go a bit deeper. And I suppose the teachings were resonating with me at some level. And it was then meeting him and being part of that event, I really thought, you know, it actually is time for me to make some decisions. And I think there are societal, systemic changes needed, absolutely, particularly the likes of carers, health workers, those you mentioned. But there's also then that element of personal responsibility that I had to take on.
Rory, how would you describe yourself, how you were then when the burnout kicked in?
I think ultimately, I mean, there was exhaustion, there was fatigue, there was elements of anxiety, tension, stress, starting to lose confidence. And then ultimately starting to feel unhappy and the light going out of my eyes and feeling a bit lost. And also hypocritical that I was espousing these messages of well-being and wellness and change, and I wasn't really walking it. So I felt I had to walk away from that and rediscover who I was and what I was about and how I was doing it.
And what did you do to get yourself together?
Well, I suppose this is the thing about in our society, particularly the elephant in the room, it tends to be finance and income. And, you know, increasingly it's not easy to survive, particularly with rent and so on. But I find that any kind of deep change has to take time, and that's, it did take me time, at least 2 years of feeling really lost, and I was in quite a dark place. And you know, my wife is a songwriter. She even wrote a song about that time. It's a song. It's called Treasure Scattered, but it's about a ship crashing and hitting the rocks under the sea, but when it crashes, all this kind of gold and treasure appears out. And in some ways, that's the metaphor for what happened to me. I had to kind of hit that darkness inside myself and to find that gold. And ultimately, through a whole series of, whether it be meditation, yoga, retreat, traveling, hitchhiking, all sorts of things worked and contributed. It was really about rewiring myself to a more sustainable, happy, balanced place and revaluing how I define success, also ultimately as one of simplicity and trying to take it easier, and self-compassion as well.
Okay, Rory McKiernan, thanks a million. Well done. Dr. Deirdre O'Shea, interesting there that Rory talks about it not as a breakdown, but as a breakthrough. And it would strike you that it could cause a positive revaluation of how you work and how you live.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. When we talk about burnout, we talk about it being a downward spiral, and that's the challenge with it, that once we start to get burnout, we start feeling those, you know, that anxiety, almost senses of feeling down in the dumps and so on, and that sort of spirals us down. The interesting thing about research on burnout is that about 20 years ago, researchers started trying to look at, well, what can we do about it? What's the opposite of burnout? And they started researching the concept of work engagement, which is about feeling energetic about your work, dedicated to your work, absorbed in your work. And the interesting thing that they found was that this actually, in many cases, buffers the effect of burnout. And we experience work engagement when we have a challenge in our jobs, but also we have sufficient resources both in our jobs and within ourselves to be able to meet those challenges.
And that if people find meaning and purpose and everything else in their work, it does help, doesn't it?
Exactly. Now, in saying that, you have, you know, jobs that are highly meaningful, and if workload is sufficiently high for long enough periods of time, of course, you know, there's only so long that it will buffer the effects of it.
Okay. For anyone who feels they might be approaching burnout, Deirdre, what would be your concrete advice to them today?
I think the first thing I would look at is what is it in their environment that is potentially contributing to burnout? So is it huge demands in their work? Is it that, you know, there's things in their life more broadly that are contributing to them feeling a sense of overload? So first of all, thinking about what is it that is causing this burnout. I think the common theme from most of the speakers that you were talking to today is the need for some sort of rest or detachment or break from whatever those contributing factors are. And that leads back to this idea of how do we recover from work and from those stresses and strains. That can be different for each individual. You know, we all enjoy different things. You know, we all get a sense of meaning and purpose from different activities. But to find that for yourself and see where you can craft a little bit of that into
and switch
your job
off,
or your work.
Switch off. People aren't Absolutely. Switching off enough this last year, are they? Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Deirdre O'Shea. And thanks as well to Kieran Walsh, to Stephanie Costello and to Rory McKiernan. Let's take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.